Welcome back, everybody, to Justifiably Proud Productions. I'm your humble host, Jim Farrell, and I have a special guest with us today, a good longtime friend of mine from the fire service, assistant chief of the Cottleville. Is it Cottleville Fire Protection District or Cottleville Fire Rescue? Or
Cottleville Fire Protection District is our official name.
Awesome. Yeah. Craig's the assistant fire chief, and I met him in 1990 when I joined the junior firefighter program there in that department. And he's made a long time career of that. And Craig, I'd like to welcome you, or Chief, I'd like to welcome you to the show.
Yeah, it's Craig, buddy. You know how that we go back a long ways. No, it's my pleasure and honor to be here, Jimmy. I've been following your podcast when it started, and it's been exciting. It's been a lot of fun, and hearing a lot of the old and St. Louis and Cottleville stories definitely bring me a smile and a trip down memory lane. So,
yeah, did you catch the one about heading down, what was it, Mid Rivers Mall Drive? And
yes.
Yeah, you got that one? Okay, good. Yeah,
that was pretty good. Yeah.
Oh, so cool. When I was there, we had four stations. One of them was completely volunteer. One of them was partially paid, and then supplemented by career staff in the afternoon. And two other stations were full-time career. But tell us a little bit about Cottleville today.
Sure. Right. So we established in 1908 as a fire protection district. So I know that's probably different for you guys and what you deal with. So what a fire protection district is, at least in the state of Missouri, is we're our own governing body. We're covered by the 321 statutes, which are set up through the legal system in the state. But we elect a board of directors. The residents of our fire district elect a board of directors. And those board of directors can be a 3-member board or a 5-member board. And those directors govern the fire district. So in the hierarchy of terms, you know, you have your firefighters, you have your engineers, you have your company officers and captains, you have your battalion chiefs. Then you have your assistant chief. And then above the chief is the board of directors. So we love it because we literally get to deal with people who only are concerned with the fire district of Cottleville Fire District. So they're not aldermen worried about the trash and the sewer and the water and the snow removal. So we really feel like it's a great, great system for us. They work for the residents. They do, they take the taxpayers' best interests at heart financially, you know, physically, or emergency response wise. And they do what they feel is best for the residents, the fire district, and everyone involved. So it's really special. I feel very blessed to be a part of it. I started back there in 1987 as a junior as well. Spent my time on doing all the grunt work, right? You know, we're running the brush fires, we're raking the leaves, we're doing the hard firefighting work. And we started off with one paid crew. The paid crew started in 88, had three members per station one, three crews of three. We've grown now. We have 61 employees. We cover four stations. We still have four stations, three rescue engines, staff with four minimum of three on three shifts working 4096. We have a 110-foot platform at our station one, staff with five minimum of four, and then a battalion chief on shift. So we work 4896. We have assistant chief, myself, operations, assistant chief fire marshal. We have a battalion chief training officer, fire chief, two inspectors, the admin staff. We have administrative assistant and then executive office manager, all those full time. And then that's all governed, like I said, by a 5-member board of directors elected by the residents of our district. So we're running around 4,100 calls a year. We still are BLS. We run with an ALS countywide ambulance. 80% of what we do is EMS, medical MVAs, just like everybody else. So we do try to catch a couple working structure fires here and there. We had had about a 3 every 3-week average, right? So averaging out about 1 a week structure fire. So we're a very, very affluent area, right? But we have a variety. So we have three subdivisions where the median price is $1.8 million for the homes. We have some average, you know, multiple 400 home subdivisions of, you know, $300,000 to $800,000 houses. Then we have a couple areas. Back in the era, you used to volunteer at, Jimmy, of some you know, they're $50,000 to $100,000 houses. You know, in this area, that's inflation.
Thanks for pointing out that I'm white trash, man. I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, you know, we can't lie to the listeners, right? They need to know, the whole story. But
yeah,
it's great. So we have a great support group in our community, right? We have a community outreach program that does amazing things in the community for anyone in need. We kind of tarted ourselves as the organization of first resort. And basically what that means is when somebody has a problem that lives, works, or drives through a fire district, we want them to think of the Cottonwood Fire District to be the first ones to help them. So it served us very well. The people support us, the businesses support us, and everybody seems to be there for us. So,
and now these days you have a lot of being the fire district
is
correct. You know,
it's kind of our front, middle and end job. I think I lost you.
That leaves you there.
Says you're having connectivity issues, Jimmy. I'm not sure if you can hear me. It's going to try to save the recording locally. I don't know if that means anything other than me looking stupid talking to myself while you're not here. But I'm used to that.
Okay, I can resume. So you got a lot of automatic aid going on these days. Is that correct?
Correct. So yeah, we're all CAD dispatch, right? Every unit has a GPS unit. Everything's run by Central Square through our central dispatch agency, which is a countywide organization. But we have automatic mutual aid built in. So the chiefs of the St. Charles County, but we're in 40 square miles of the fire district located in St. Charles County, you know, in Missouri, which is 30 miles northwest of St. Louis. But there's 9 fire districts in the county. And all of the chiefs have agreed to automatic aid. So what that means is if there's a structure fire, we send a 6-unit response to a working structure fire. We pick the 6 closest units based on live GPS data. If the call is in the Cottonwood Fire District, but 5 of the closest trucks are O'Fallon Fire District fire apparatus, those 5 trucks are going. It is the best for the citizens. It's best for the fire districts. It's best for the firefighters, right? The crews want the closest apparatus there to do the most good in the shortest period of time and obviously prevent as much damage and destruction as possible. So gone are the days of it's my fire district and I'm only running these calls and I'm not calling anybody for help, right? That's a thing of the past. So everything is based on GPS location. When the 911 call is dispatched, CAD automatically picks the closest trucks. Obviously, right, if my Station 2 truck is on a dumpster fire and there's a house fire down the street, miraculously, my company officers always end up going in service in plenty of time to make it onto that card to be at that structure fire. And
sure.
That dumpster fire might burn itself out, but ain't nobody missing a structure fire. We won't pull off EMS calls, right? Obviously, we might bug the medics to cut us free, but we understand, right, that's part of the deal. But it's an amazing system, right? It took a little bit of getting used to because, you know, what we did have in the olden days was kings of their kingdoms, right? The chiefs only wanted to run their fire districts with no input, no outside information. They wanted to do it their way and nobody else's way. So we had some growing pains with that, but we have a lot of progressive minded fire chiefs right now and a lot of union strong company officers and battalion chiefs that are understanding that, you know, the 5 closest trucks, although not be from your district, everyone's trained to the similar standards, right? We train with each other, just like we run calls with each other. So that helps. And we know if we have two crews working a structure fire, waiting for the third truck to come just so it's a Cottonville truck is silly. If the O'Fallon truck is closer, they can be on the scene and we can have more personnel on the scene and it's safer for our guys and gals. So 100% a different mindset. A lot of people, when we talk about this outside of the metropolitan area, they're like, you guys are crazy, right? How does that work? What does it do? And it's honestly with letting CAD do it, it actually works very well, right? We don't have stipulations. So you're closer, you're going.
You run a lot more with O'Fallon or Central County or a little bit of both?
So, yeah, I mean, Highway K area, 40 and Highway K, Cottonville Zone 3, and actually the north side of Cottonville Zone 1 has really developed quickly. Highway K was one of the fastest growing regions. O'Fallon was one of the fastest growing regions in the state of Missouri for a while. So we get a lot of calls up that region with O'Fallon, but we also run a bunch with Central County, right? Our Station 2 and Station 4 are really close to the Central County, you know, that southwest corridor. I'm sorry, southeast corridor. And we got a lot of runs with them, right? We'll catch, it's nothing on a structure fire to have 8724, 8744, 9564, 9450, 8712, 8706, and 9542 is, that's your still arm assignment. So St. Charles City, Center County, Cottonville. And
St. Charles City even comes out there.
Yes. 9450. Wow. They're right there. You know, on 94, Zumbel area. So, with the 364 extension, those guys can get into our district quick. And same thing with us, we can get into O'Fallon super quick. 8744 can almost beat 8712 to Highway K because 364 is like, it's an interstate from the river all the way into Wentzville. So, we can.
Do y'all go to Pattonville at all?
So St. Charles City does Pattonville, right? So St. Charles City runs their border onto the bridge, the other side of the river. So we go into Chesterfield, which is now called Monarch. We're first into Spirit Airport for any alert twos, any airplane crashes. 8734, 8706 are first dispatched with them. So any structure fire, I'm trying to think of the last time you've been out to Chesterfield, the bottoms, all the gumbo bottoms, it's overdeveloped, right? It's literally a town. All commercial businesses, million-dollar buildings, multi-million-dollar buildings. So 8734 runs down in there with the Monarch 2253, 2257 on all kinds of fire alarm soundings, structure fires, MVAs. It's a very busy section for our three houses running into Chesterfield Bottoms there. So
is 8706 a battalion chief on shift?
Yes, sir. Yeah. So we have battalion chief 4896 with the crews. I got to send you some pictures. We just built a new BC rig. So, you know, we are in the Chevy Tahoes for forever. And when we just built a new fleet of Pierces, and with the Pierces, we put a compartment in the cab for all the fire gear, right? We're trying to get the fire gear out of the cab, just for the PFAS and the carcinogens and all that stuff. Well, in the process of that, one of the battalion chiefs, actually two of them were on my truck, Kenny, but one of them got promoted in the process. We're sitting there talking and I looked at him and I said, you know, it really concerns me that the BC drives around 24/7 with his gear. It was in a gear bag, but it was in the back of that Tahoe. And even when you wash it, right, all these studies the IFF's doing is still telling us that gear is still off-gassing and those PFAS are, you're still breathing it in. It's still bad for you. So we really need to look in getting that gear out of the battalion chief's car. And they have a couple of like these vaults that are sealed and all that other stuff. Well, we were due for a Tahoe, so for a new BC vehicle. So what we ended up doing was we bought a 2500 heavy-duty Silverado crew cab short bed. We've outfitted the front of the cab with dual radios. We have an iPad for a tablet command. We have the central square running on a tablet for them. All the lights and sirens and stuff. But in the bed, we came up with a Highway Products bed cover, and it's got compartmentalization in it and stuff. But what we did was we ended up building some boxes and put a rollout tray. So we have their turnout gear and their XCBA out of the cab. It's in the bed, but it's sealed. It's got lights and it's waterproof and all other stuff. So trying to think long-term health for these guys and gals and getting that gear and those Carson engines and stuff out of the cab, but also keeping it where we can, you know, readily available, get the gear on, get the SCBA on it and get to work. The biggest fear is you pull up as a BC to a structure fire with a mom and a baby hanging out the second floor window, and you come off in your duty uniform with a t-shirt and your Red Wing boots on, right? You gotta get dressed, you gotta get ready, and you gotta do it quickly. So it's really turned out well. So with our new fleet, we went back to Gold Leaf, kind of an old tradition of Cottova we got away from, but went back to Gold Leaf on our Pierces, and we put Gold Leaf on the battalion chief's vehicle, and it really turned out sharp. So I'll have to shoot you a couple pictures of it.
Yeah,
check it out. But it's a nice ride, and all of my BCs are they're truck guys. So the fact that they were getting a 3/4-ton truck, they were all really happy about it. Because
oh yeah, for sure,
all truck guys. So, but yeah, a lot of.
Can we step back and talk about because 4896s has been hot here talking over the last few years. Our operations division used to work your old schedule, the
Kelly, modified Kelly.
Yeah, right. And so we're happy with that, but there's a lot of talk about the 4896. And can you share with us a little bit about, I'm sure y'all did a thorough study, benefits, drawbacks, any suggestions? I'm sure our viewers and listeners would like to hear somebody's take on how that schedule actually works.
Absolutely. So it was a fight, right? I mean, we're going back, 12 years ago. We popped this thing popped on the scene and it immediately divided our fire district right down the middle, right? 49.5% for, 49.5% against, and, a 0.5% of just, I don't know yet, right? I could work either way. So it was a really challenge. So, we had a shop meeting and, we said, we're going to vote a simple majority vote to try it. We'll do a 6 months or 4 month trial. I don't remember exactly what it was, but we will have to have a 70% majority vote to move forward with it. So, we jumped into this trial. So I'll give you my personal take on it. So my wife, is a paramedic at the Amless District and she was working the Kelly schedule and we had a, 3-year-old at home, right? Brand new baby. So my wife and I were alternating shift work so we could obviously one was on duty, one was at home with the kid back and forth and it worked out great. So we needed 24 hours of daycare every 6 days, which between her mom and my mom, they would help us out with that. Well, immediately this started talking at 4896, it was going to shatter my home life. Because of the daycare and stuff. So I was against it initially, right? It was tough. And, knowing how everything works, at least in our region, St. Louis metropolitan region, when one department does it, other people will follow. So our fear is that if my wife's department did it as well, we would have two options. We didn't see each other for 48 hours and we needed 48 hours of babysitting every 6 days, or I would work too. She would work too. We would be off too. And then that would be our life forever, essentially, right? I work too. She works too. We're off too together. And then that never changes. So it was scary with us, especially having a newborn at home. So I voted no. My crew voted no. Several people voted no. But it passed. The first trial passed at 51%. And we got into it. And it was definitely a different schedule. So I did a lot of research on it to try to find the pros and cons, and it stemmed from the 2448 people in California, from what I could find, were struggling because they couldn't afford to live where they worked, right? Because some of those areas were pretty affluent, and firefighters' pay is not the greatest. So some of these people were trying to trade offs and work 2 days and then have 4 days off, and they really were working that way because some of them were driving 5 and 6 hours one way to work. And that's kind of where it all developed from. Well, we did a lot of research on, the May Days and all these things as far as these departments that have been doing 48s. And I don't remember the statistics, but like 80% of the May Days came from 50% of the departments doing 4896. And it was on the second day, right? So that was kind of scary and alarming that, what is it if you're exhausted and you're on the second day and you're up all night, right? How does that work? we're not that busy, right? I mean, we're busy, but we're nowhere near that busy. Obviously, being a BLS department, we don't transport. So we run the call, we help the patient onto the ambulance, the ambulance goes to the hospital, we go back and go back to bed in the middle of the night call. So it, that part wasn't too bad. And I got in on the 4896 at towards the end of my I was a company officer on our 8724, which was our busiest truck. So on the second day, right, my wife would come up with my son, and you know, he loved hanging out at the fire station anyway. So I get to spend some time with him and hang out with him. So that, you know, that wasn't really a big deal, but our fear was if she changed that. So a lot of the people had to change their agreements, custody agreements, you know, because I mean, we might have, you know, 60 people and probably 40 of them have had at least one practice marriage, and you know, with kids, and custody is always tough with the ex-wives and stuff. So that was a big problem for several of our people, right? Getting that all changed and aligned in court, and their exes, you know, some are cooperative, some are not. So that was tough for a lot of our people. But for the most part, you know, we stumbled through the trial, and it came down to the vote, and you know, several people were looking at the fact of, you know, I could live at the Lake of the Ozarks, which is about a 2-hour drive from St. Louis. I could live at the Lake of the Ozarks, work 48s, and, you know, only have to drive in once and drive home once. It passed, you know, like 71%, I believe is what it was, you know, it passed with whatever it needed. So we switched to that, and we've been lucky, right? We've had no issues, no problems, no real difficulties. Probably the biggest conflict we had was we used to do commercial inspections, and a lot of the guys were like, hey, you know, if I work a Saturday, Sunday, right, there's 10, 12 days I miss that I can't get any inspections done. And the fire marshal's like, well, you consider Saturday a work day. So if you guys do inspections on Saturday, knock it out. And miraculously, we didn't start doing inspections on Saturday, but the guys still got their inspections done. But one of the problems we didn't account for is training. So if you work Friday, Saturday, and then Saturday, Sunday, and then Sunday, Monday, right, there's 3 crew weeks in a row, and 90% of your vacation, or none of your on-duty time is a weekend. So, you know, our crews don't work Saturdays. They don't work Sundays as a work day, right? We check the truck. We clean as needed, but, you know, Sunday is just a day off. Saturday is pretty much turning into the same thing. So that was a bit of a challenge, getting your ISO training hours in. That's a bit of a challenge. You got to think about these things ahead of time, right? There's a lot of greats to it, right? You drive in once, you stay 2 days, and you drive home once, and you know, all those things are great, but a lot of logistical stuff is a challenge. So you can't ever take overtime without killing a 4-day, right? That's something that the people that did modify Kelly doesn't make a whole lot of sense, and those kind of things. And we did not change. Like we were taking vacation days in 3-day blocks because that's how we were working. So we had to change all that stuff in our contracts and our policies and stuff. And we were anticipating it dropping our sick time, where you like when it used to be, you just call in for a day, right? And you got 3 days off. If you call in a sick day, you got 3 days off. Well, now it seems like 99% of the time when guys call off, they call off for 48.
48, yeah,
and they're taking a 48, so
they're getting 10 days off.
They're bookending those 2 4-days with a 48 period of sick time. So we experienced some issues with sick time, and we've had to do some things to adjust that to bring it, you know, back into budgets back and stuff. And the shop was pretty forward and you know, working on solutions for that, so we didn't create too much of a problem. But a lot more to it than just I work 2 days instead of 3 with a day between each one. So
so I understand the impact to the employee. What about the impact to the fire district? And like, even have they seen a benefit to it other than it being a benefit to the employee? And number two, how does it affect little things like making sure payroll gets taken care of, things like that? Has that become a difficult challenge for your administrative staff?
Absolutely not. I would say, aside the district, right, from a district perspective, it's been minimal impact. I would say the only 2 things that the district were affected with was, you know, which really doesn't become a district issue until it is when the guys don't get their company inspections done. If they didn't get their company inspections done, that would be a problem. And that was just more of a scheduling on the company officers having to balance his days when he is working and figure that out. Training does seem to be a little more problematic. I would say the guys say it seems like we're training every day. And I would say that's probably a partial perception, but some reality, right? We are training more because if you catch a Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Sunday, Monday, right? When you do that, right? Everybody catches those. But when you catch that in the middle of the month, that kills over three quarters of your month for training hours and training days. And guess what? If we have some guys that need to do physicals or we've got the training, inspection schedule and stuff like that, it makes training a challenge to get your hours in.
Or so, things like public fire education may suffer.
Correct, like right? I mean,
and training or vice versa.
Sure, but we don't have any. Didn't have any payroll issues, right? I mean, with FSLA for us, it's pretty straightforward. How overtime is paid and all that stuff. It didn't change any of that. It was, here's how that works, right? There's still three shifts. There's 365 days in the year. You're not working any more. You're not working any less. You're working the same number of days. So that didn't change. And that was one of the initial scare tactics is you actually work less days. That was one of the things that one of the guys said to get people to vote for it. You actually work less days. And one of our guys is like, how is that possible? We're not hiring anybody. Three shifts, 365 days divided by A shift days, B shift days, and C shift days. There's no way that is true statement. But I would say it's for a fire district that doesn't run ambulances, no brainer, man. That's a walk in the park unless you're super busy, right? You're in Detroit or Boston or Chicago, or you're running New York. There's guys running so many, so they can't even work a 24. It would be dangerous to the crews, especially if you're a house that catches a lot of burners and you're burning two, three a day. That to me would scare me. But now the ambulance district that I mentioned that serves our county, they have switched to it. They've got a couple parameters in place. If a crew's up all night, then they can switch out with another crew at a slower house. And they've had to do some things that have kind of made it where I don't know how often they do it, but I know that's one of the things they talked about. But definitely thinking about your people, right? That's the one of the things is sometimes we as firefighters don't know what we want. We just think we know, and then we ask for it, and we get it, and then we don't like it. And it just gotta So we had a committee together. We evaluated it. There was a lot of pressure because the St. Louis County departments were doing it. The other St. Charles County departments were doing it. So we felt like everyone had to do it. Because like I said, before, we do a lot of mutual aid. We do mutual aid training and calls. So our guys and gals wanted to work and train with the crews that they're going to, run calls with. So if they were doing 48s, we kind of felt a little bit of pressure there, but I was pretty convinced, from the get-go it was going to happen. So it was more of a formality than anything, but we've been doing 48s for probably 12 years now. So pretty, it's become the norm, right? I mean, that's
no savings the overtime and sick leave is about what it was before, I guess. We have a department north of us that swears that they've saved so much money, even though they're hiring overtime every day.
That was one of the talking points, because guys aren't going to, they're only going to call in for a 24 if they need it. They're going to call in. We were convinced everyone's going to call in less for sick. Because every time they're off, it's a 4 day. Well, like I told you before, when you were working the modified Kelly, if you took one sick day, if it was not on your 4 day, you still got 3 days off. And if it was on your 4 day, you got 6 days off. So what I think is more prevalent is you take a 48, you call in off sick, they're taking a 48. So I would say use is up. But again, if you have if you're minimum staffing because your people are on PTO with vacation time, then obviously it's going to create overtime. But I would say
what is your minimum staffing?
So we have on our shift, we currently have five on the ladder, one battalion chief at station one. Then we have three guys, three crew members, minimum staffing on each one of our engines. So our station 2, 3, and 4 has a rescue engine, staffed with 4, minimum of 3. So we allow 3 people off on vacation. And then if there's 1 person off on education and or sick time, that'll put us at minimum manning. So we can voluntarily be down off 3 and we still have 1 reserve person. And then if another person is, like I said, training, education leave, or sick time or whatever, then we will be at true minimum. So if 4 people are off, we're at minimum.
I gotcha. So you mentioned earlier about, in talking about that schedule, the RIT impact. What is the culture like in Cottleville about your RIT procedures? What is it? I'm trying to take a stance or promote that, man, if I need a RIT team, there's one person I'd want to be on that RIT team, and that's me, other than my God, right? And, sure. And I think the mentality is it's a shit. I'm sorry. It's a boring assignment.
Yeah, it's a punishment.
And I think trying to encourage people to take more, if I need a RIT team, I'd sure want to be on it. You know what I mean? Type deal. And I was just curious what the culture is like there in Cottleville when it comes
sure.
to
RIT. Sure. So, I mean, yeah, if you get assigned a RIT, it was a punishment. And when I call for RIT, I want the youngest, most athletic group of training gurus that they ever have. So let me throw you our spin on that. So about 8 years ago, we started dabbling with Blue Card with Brunicini out of Phoenix's Blue Card Command System, and kind of started dabbling. Actually, my first boss when I got promoted to assistant chief, Rob Wiley, brought it in. He's like, hey, I went through this class and I really like the structure of the incident command system that the Brunicinis are putting out. Why don't you take this class and give me your thoughts? Thinking, you know, hey, here's Craig. Here's the guy that was born and raised to be a company officer, right? Never going to be an assistant chief. Wouldn't be dumb enough to leave the front right seat of a fire truck with a red helmet and put on a white one. But I took the class and I thought it was amazing. It took everything that we did differently. By differently, I mean, we have, you know, 3 stations, 4 units and 3 different shifts. So I had 12 company officers plus a slew of acting company officers who had an idea of how everything should go. And guess what? Very rarely were any of those 12 on the same page. So we were really kind of, I mean, we were good. I mean, in my opinion, I'm not trying to be proud of my crew and department and district and guys and gals and stuff. We were good at putting out fires, but we were horrible like everyone else at fire ground communications and incident command. You know, we were just, nobody liked it. It wasn't fun. And usually if you got stuck in command, you weren't getting to fight fire. So like everybody, we seemed to struggle with being good at it. But we brought in the blue card structure. And what it did was that it simplified the jobs of incident command. Everyone understood what we were doing, why we were doing it, and the procedures to do that. So the reason I'm getting to this story is we use on deck. So when the first arriving unit company officer's on the scene, he's in incident command. He's literally attacking command, right? He is in the fire. He's in command because he's the only one there, but he's in there as mobile command. The next unit gets on the scene, you know, obviously probably setting up water supply for fighting fire or whatever rescue what we need. When the first battalion chief gets on the scene, then they take over the incident. And then they assign units as they go. But when the units come on the scene, they go level 1 staging. And it's basically, right, I am here. I am ready for an assignment, right? Gone are the days of crews just coming up and doing work. That doesn't happen anymore. So what that became was level 1 staging, where the battalion chief would assign them. And then we would assign to the 5th crew to jobs. And then the next truck on the scene, the last one on the scene, would go on deck alpha. So on deck alpha is obviously A side of the building, and they are the RIT team. And we will keep you on deck alpha until somebody comes out, somebody goes through recycle or rehab and is ready to go. And then we try to filter those fresh crews through. So our intention is to always have a crew in the front yard, air packs, hand tools, flashlights, right? We are ready to go. A lot of the times the first in engine will throw out a saw. We switched. We have a combi tool we keep on the truck as far as a pop in the commercial door type thing. Battery powered fans, that kind of stuff. Of just all those tools that a RIT team might need. We either have, you know, the compartment doors open or the tools are on the ground type of stuff. So, I think it works really well because it isn't what you said earlier, right? It isn't the punishment of being the writ team. I'm not the writ team who is going to sit. I'm going to kneel in the front yard on the red tarp and wait for the fire to be out. And then either I'm going to have to roll hose or I'm going to get sent back home, right? I'm not going to do anything cool, anything fun. So the On Deck Alpha is, hey man, you're the next crew to go.
Just the sound of it sounds motivating.
Yeah, be strapped up, be ready to go because when the first guys come out of their fight, right, they're gonna go to recycle. Which first out recycle, they change their bottle, they grab a drink of water, and they're ready to roll again. You do two bottles, you go to rehab, right? You go through the medics, check you out, and give you all that go. So, first crew comes out. Well, as soon as they're ready to go on deck, right, the crew that's on deck is going into the fire. So
it's going in. I gotcha.
It really,
they may get some activity. They may get to exercise some skills because somebody else will become on deck alpha.
Sure. And right? And then let me tell you what my crews think of that. As far as initially we talked about, well, is that first gen crew tired? And I'll throw this one out there for you to chew on. My first gen crew has probably the best working knowledge of what that structure is, at least what they have in exterior conditions, because they were the first ones in there, right? So they have best visibility, worst visibility. They've got an idea of what they're facing. So if a crew goes down, I'm sending my crew in potentially who has the most knowledge of this building, of this fire. So there's no chance they're going to do good, right?
I gotcha. Yeah, they got a preview of what's going on in there.
Yeah, they smell it, they taste it, they kind of know. So that works. But,
right.
You know, I mean, we've done a lot of research and training and stuff, and May Day is a big thing for us here. We all adopted a May Day policy. We're all doing it the same way. But on the study and the training we did, like most of the time, if a crew goes down, right, crews interior are already working, are the first ones and usually the most common ones to rescue. You know, if we get a lost or down crew or firefighter, crews inside working are doing that. So we're really heavy on, listen, if you're attacking the fire and you're making headway, don't stop, because that might be the best thing for the crew that's needing the writ team. Keep doing what you're doing. We got a crew doing a primary, crew doing a secondary, you know, crew securing utilities. They're already in that building. They're already on air. They're already two steps ahead of the writ team or the on deck alpha team. You know, we're going to send them, right? We're going to make them do good things. So, I think we're very well prepared for that. And I think the crews look at it like it's not that punishment of, writ team on your knees in the front yard with your face piece down around your neck and your helmet on loosely and, sit there and be punished, right? So it works well. We really have done well with Blue Car, the Brunicinis. You know, I think they have a great program there. And I know it's not for everybody. Everybody doesn't love it, but we've seemed to adapt it and it works well for what we need and what we do in the St. Charles County area, especially in Cottleville Fire District.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, I was wondering if you could wrap up our show here today with a back in quarters story, something interesting, something funny from being back in quarters.
Okay, so I got a good one. I hope you enjoy it.
Okay.
So, back in the day,
Do you need a dramatic piano?
Probably some sort of dramatic piano entrance. I'm gonna grab a drink of water just so I can.
Okay. I'll let the dramatic piano play for a little bit, and then there you go.
Spectacular. All right. So, I'm gonna tell a story about a guy you knew very well.
Okay.
But it's one of my favorite stories. It's a story that everyone in the Cottleville Fire District knows, and people don't even know this guy. So we had a patriarch at the fire district, right? One of the first paid guys there. It was Mike Bailey, and everybody called him Uncle Mike because that's what he was to the fire district. He was everybody's uncle.
Right.
He was a captain at our 8744, our station four, right? It's our slowest company, right? Those guys, they protect the million-dollar homes and they get the rectal bleeds for the old rich people. It's what they did. So same time I was captain in our 8724, the zones are next to each other, but it's our busiest company. So, we work together a lot, right? Now I had a dream team, right? We both had really good crews, right? I had an engineer that had been there, knew the district. When we got a fire in a subdivision, he knew where we were going. I didn't even have to pull up the CAD until we were in the subdivision because he knew how to get there. I had one of those rock solid backstep guys, right? I mean, he knew what my mentality was. We saw big fire. We had big water. We had, you know, brown smoke. We put water on that fire. He just knew my mentality. So Mike had a crew very similar to that. Good group of guys. But we would definitely kick butt and take names if there was a call, and we had a good time with that. So we got a call from my battalion chief. Well, it wasn't battalion chief. It was a lead captain at the time. We didn't have battalion chief right yet, but they needed to test the hose on 8724. So back in the day, we used to test their own hose, and we would split that up, and crews would do it. So it wasn't my crew's time to do that truck. The crew that did it didn't get it done. But battalion chief needed a favor. He's like, hey, man, can you guys do this? I'm like, that's what we do, right? We take care of problems. We solve problems. We're going to do it. So it was very, very odd fall day. It was like mid-80s, super nice day, right? Just not typical for St. Louis, you know, in the fall. So I give Mike a call at 44. I said, hey, man, you guys help us knock out this hose. I'll buy you guys dinner anywhere you want. He said, fine, we'll be up. So we pull the truck outside. My engineer, you know, we get on the hydrant and we start pulling the lines off. Actually, we laid the 5-inch first and the 3-inch, and then we're starting pulling the hand lines off. So I grab the hose card. I start jotting down numbers, right? We're going to run all these number stuff. So 44 crew pulls up, and his guys jump off, and right, they immediately start to park their truck and they start helping with the hose. And Mike comes off the truck. He walks up to me and he grabs the clipboard out of my hand. And I said, he said, I don't know what you're thinking, but I ain't rolling nothing and I ain't loading nothing. And we lost it. I'm saying there was 6 grown men laying on the back ramp of our station 2, just laughing, crying. I mean, we were literally on our knees laughing. But he was as serious as they come. He gave me a point with his finger like he used to do. He's like, I ain't rolling nothing and I ain't loading nothing. So that phrase made it around the fire district, like, you know, faster than, you know, somebody's breaking up with their wife or girlfriend. It was everywhere. So end of the year, kind of dropped off hose testing. Well, you know, next spring comes around, we start hose testing again. Probably every day there was a truck testing hose. Somebody said, I ain't rolling nothing. And I nothing. So it literally became the hose testing comment forever. New guys would come on, these hear these comments, like, what are we talking about? So it would give the story. So unfortunately, we lost Uncle Mike in December of 2011, job-related cancer. It was you know, rough. He his whole life he was being a firefighter back in the days when there weren't air packs, there weren't stuff like that and stuff. So it was you know, it was one of those guys that, you know, he got the cancer from doing the job how we were all trained to do the job back in the day. So we have a golf tournament every year, and we raise money, and the golf tournament sends guys, any members of our crew, of our department or district, to Colorado Springs, to the Fallen Firefighters thing out there in Colorado Springs. And let all the people experience, you know, what the international does for the people that have lost their lives in the line of duty. We have a goal to get everyone through that's been there. We've actually taken our board of directors out there so they can understand when they approve guys and gals time off, what we're doing out there and what it means to them. So taking them along has really been an amazing asset to that support. But we've got awards at the golf tournament, and you've got the I ain't rolling nothing and I ain't loading nothing awards. And those are all stemming from one fall afternoon when Uncle Mike decided they were helping us load and hose, or they were helping us test hose, but he wasn't rolling nothing and he wasn't loading nothing.
So, load nothing. That's awesome.
It's yeah, one of those.
He was a big impact on my life too. He was a real special guy.
I got to go to Colorado Springs with his widow. He actually, the irony of the whole story was he actually was my uncle, right? I mean, everyone treated him like it was right. An uncle, but my cousin was also in the department. So we got to present her with this flag. It was amazing, right? Just what they do out there in Colorado Springs is second to none. If hopefully you never have to go out there because there's somebody you know or someone from your department or your district is there, but every member, every fire service member should go out there and experience that because it is one heck of an amazing tribute to the guys and gals we've lost in the line of duty. But we have plaques up all around the fire station, remembering Uncle Mike, remembering all the things he did for the district and the residents and stuff. But he'll forever be remembered as I ain't rolling nothing and I ain't loading nothing.
That's so awesome.
Yeah, it's one of those stories. I hope it lives on for all of the Caldwell Fire District's time in existence, because it definitely would pay tribute and homage to a man that was one of the most dedicated, selfless firefighters that I'd ever met. And he would grab the fire by the short hairs and he would get it done. So I strive to be like him as a captain. And it was all about, doing whatever they need us to do, right? The people that are in the burning building, the people whose house is on fire, if they're trapped in the car, we do what they pay us to do, right? And that's whatever they need.
Very cool. Do you happen to have a picture of the 8744 that was there when you and I started? What we had to learn to drive first.
The old front mount was 100%. A lot of fleet pictures we have. Yeah. I wish I could share some pictures. I have a couple of really special ones that I'd like to show the viewers of you pumping that truck.
Yeah. So, the original, the 8701 that I knew, he was the one that would check me out on that truck. And I remember telling him, cause that was the volunteer station. I lived like 2 miles east of there. And I remember the day I got checked off on that truck, I said, man, Ed, I'm never going to pump this truck. What are the likelihood? Usually the career crew will show up first.
Sure.
And I don't know if you remember that old farmhouse on Towers Road.
I do remember the
farmhouse. Two or three days later, I'm pumping that truck at a fire. I couldn't believe it, man. It was crazy.
First in, so right. We have,
I didn't drive the truck there, but I pumped it.
Sure.
If you remember,
giving everybody a little retrospect, right? We had, at that time, we had probably $300,000 and $400,000 custom Pierce apparatus responding with the pay crews. And it was an old front mount Ford with a 460 gas engine. It was an old international
split rear end,
pumping this fire with 200 foot rollout boosters on each midship of the pump, a couple inch and a half cross lays, some 3 inch in the back.
You had to remember, we used to make fun of it. We had to go boom and lock it down, and then you'd have to get back in the cab, put it in fourth gear or some crap, and then get out, and then
the midship or the front mount shift over was on the front. So you jumped out, shifted it, put it fourth, and you flip the bar down over. There was a lock to keep it from popping out of gear, because it was, I think it was a 76 Ford.
It had an FMC body on it, I think.
I remember
Ed telling me that, hey, you'd be surprised. And then 2 or 3 days later, we had that working house fire.
Absolutely, yeah. So when I got promoted, jump back to my 4896 story, my wife and I were concerned about 4896, and we switched, and then her department started voting. Well, in between the time of her department voting and her department switching to 4896, my wife got, she started a new job with the ambulance district where she's a community paramedic doing mobile integrated health for the organization. She switched to a Monday through Friday job before her department switched to 4896. So it was kind of ironic, because one of the main reasons I took the promotion to assistant chief was I was concerned for my family life. She was pregnant with our second child. And I'm like, if we're both working 4896, that's going to be hard. So I went ahead and took the promotion to assistant chief, and then
she ended up working a 40-hour week schedule too. Then.
Before they switched, she goes to 40-hour week job. So it was all kind of like irony. But when I got promoted, I had got to get the number 8701, which is from the volunteer chief that ran the program when we were volunteers. He did a lot of the driver's training and stuff with us. So I was pretty honored to follow in Ed's footsteps with his number, and I gave him a whole bunch of trouble about it. Unfortunately, at some funerals and stuff, and then unfortunately last year he passed away as well. And we buried him right by the fire station. So it was fitting, right? We gave him a good fire department send off, but it was just more of those stuff that those guys were. They were doing the job back before we had air packs and SCBAs and stuff. And I realized the smoke they were breathing was different. It was fire. It was real wood smoke and stuff, but you know, none of that's good for anybody. All the stuff with the AFFF and the high expansion foam and all those things, all the stuff that was just part of the job back in the day. It's unfortunately taken away all the guys and gals that did it for all those longest times way too soon. So, it sucks.
I mean, time has gone by way too fast too. I mean, just reflecting on my short time there, I mean, we did some awesome stuff. I mean, we got to learn some really cool stuff, and you know, I mean, remember when Ed would take us to Pizza Hut once every few months and take all the juniors to eat? Like it was a really cool thing to be a part of, and I wish more communities had that opportunity, you know.
Sure, right. I mean he was instilling that, you know, fire family mentality to us before it was even really a thing. And you know, those that group of snot-nosed teenage kids were volunteering all the time to help out with, you know, whatever it was. And he was definitely building that mentality of, right, these are your brothers and sisters in the fire service. And it was awesome, right? My son, he's 17, and he's inspiring to be a firefighter when he grows up. And he's like, it's just not fair what you guys got to do when you were 13 and 14 and 15 years old. He's like, that would be so much of a head start for me coming into EMT and paramedic and fire academy, having that stuff under my belt. And like, yeah, it was just a different time. We were very lucky.
Yeah.
A lot of cool mentors, a lot of fun activities we did, but we were learning the whole time we were doing that stuff. So
yeah,
we had a hell of a great ride back in that early 90s era of what we did and what we were doing in our fire district. So.
So, I was going to ask you, it looks like we could have a lot more great conversations, and, I had just one final, one question, and I was hoping you'd be perfectly honest with me as we wrap this up, but was your cousin's dog Sparky really that vicious, man?
Yes. That dog was a schnauzer that would chew off his own leg if he would free him up to want to get at you. So
I mean, your family would tell me, stay away from him, and I never knew if y'all were serious. I never saw anybody pet him.
So you know? Yeah, he was a bad dog. But let me give you a reference, right? He would have been the Danda Shields windmill that you didn't want to deal with, is what he would have been.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's how bad of a dog he was.
Yeah, we'll talk about that story another time when we talk about
that is a story for a whole another episode. But dude, Jimmy, this was fun. I had a blast. I would love to come back if you and your viewers will have me. To talk about more stupid stuff we did as kids. I got all kinds of stories of stuff you did that I'm sure everyone would love to hear. And I've got a bunch of stories of stupid stuff that I did that I'm sure nobody cares about. But
yeah. So yeah, I'm glad you came on and just trying to, you know, I see what happened was, is we had a deputy chief retired, 2 years ago, I guess, or a year and a half ago. And when he did his speech at the end, he was, what's traditionally been in an undesirable position, kind of like what you and me do. We handle the fleet, we handle maintenance, you know, maybe the stuff, and there's really, anyway, when he shared a lot of his knowledge at that flag raising ceremony, a lot of these young kids were like, man, I had no idea. And it's like, yeah, we gotta pass on some of this stuff. I mean, we just got to, or we're not setting up the future generations for good fire protection.
Sure. Right. What benefit is it if I have high speed internet at my stations and my crew is in their individual bunk rooms, each watching a tablet of Netflix? Right. I mean, I get it. Right. Every rough day, long day, you want some alone time. But I mean, I can remember when we would shop as a crew together, right? We would go to the Red Box. We had a couple of times. So we was at Station 2. We had a Blockbuster. And we would go down and catch, we would catch a, you know, a Friday night movie. And we would come back as a crew. We would make popcorn. And we would watch a movie together, right? We would do that. And it was just common practice, right? If there was a, if the Blues were on or the Cardinals were playing, that, that game was on, the TV was on, and that was just normal background of dinner or whatever, right? If the Cardinals had a noon game, you know, not a lot of work got done around the stations if the Cardinals were playing at 12:15 on a, you know, the businessman special, but,
right.
That, that kind of stuff brought us together, right? The Firehouse family is, it's such a vital role that I'm afraid we're slowly losing some of that if we don't make an effort to keep it, with stuff like this and, you know, telling silly stories and funny stories or, you know, that kind of stuff. What legacy will we have to pass on? And not just from you to me, but from my current captain to, when he retires, the guy that replaces him, right? We have to keep that legacy of the Fire family growing because it's what kept me in this job. I mean, I'm in my 31st year as a paid guy, right? I've been, I started as a junior, but 31 years as paid, it's not a job, right? It's the best thing in the world, other than my family and my kids, you know, the best thing that's happened to me, right, is this career because it's brought me so many experiences of people that I would have never met before and have been in my life. And I got a whole bunch of brotherhood stuff to tell you about from back when I had an unfortunate accident on vacation and broke my neck and was in Florida and had a whole shop of Union brothers from St. Pete, Florida that had never met in my life that stepped in and were there for me. And it's a whole long story I can tell you about the brotherhood and what convinced me that, you know, you put this uniform on, you jump on the big red trucks and you do this paid volunteer, whatever, right. It brings you closer together like no other career, no other profession in the world. Right.
I remember telling you guys on my rig that, if this is just a check for you, then this is not the job for, or this is not the truck for you, you know?
Correct.
Like go be on some other boring truck. Like
you can't train enough for a job that'll kill you. And if your attitude is that you're only here for the paycheck, then you have a better chance of hurting yourself or hurting one of your crew members if that's your attitude. And right, I've heard company officers tell people, man, if that's your attitude, I don't want you on my crew. Right. I mean, just straight up.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty strong message from a company officer to a new backstep guy or even an engineer. Right, man. Hey, when the bell rings, we've got to be ready to solve whatever problem is coming down the pipe. And I need your A game every time.
Yeah. And it transfers to administration, too. I mean, we put out. I would say our administration puts out more fires, you know, non-emergency fires behind the scenes than, you know.
Sure.
But that's, you know, my biased opinion, but yeah.
100%. And again, right, it's always comedic, right? You don't know what you don't know until you know it. And, you know, I came over into the office of operations and personnel equipment, and I had an assumption as a 12-year captain of what it took to run the fire district. And I was so ignorant and clueless. It was like one of those things. Is like, man, I thought this admin building pretty much just ran itself, right? I mean, you guys just answer some phone calls, shoot out some emails, thank the board of directors every 2 weeks at a meeting for you know giving us the okay to do stuff. And man, that's just not it. But
yeah, you know, for sure.
How do you pass that on to anybody, right? You gotta
right.
You got to speak the language and you got to have somebody that's willing to listen and learn.
Cool. Well, thanks for joining us tonight. And I think, like I said, I think I'd like to have another episode sometime soon and talk about some of the other stuff we kind of talked about before the meeting. So it's really good to see you. Tell my other alumni from St. Catherine LaVarea, I said hello.
I will pass that along.
And just remember, save the neck for me, Clark.
Absolutely.